Welcome to Masters in Parenting, a podcast from Chicago Parent Magazine. I'm your host, Hillary Bird.
Welcome to our second edition of Sleep Training Babies. We are talking with Pam Jones. She is a registered nurse and co-owner with her sister, Patricia Pori, of Sweet Dreams Infant Care, and the two are the authors of Raising Confident Parents. Pam has more than 25 years experience at Chicago area hospitals and 10 years teaching parents how to teach their babies to sleep. We're going to pick up our conversation with Pam. Now, what about if it's not your first baby, if this is your second, how do you transition a baby to sleep in a room with an older sibling, especially, you know, like now the Academy of Pediatrics recommends sleeping in your room, however it be, you know, whether it's co-sleeping or in a bassinet or in a crib, sleeping in a parent's room up to a year, but at least 6 months. Now, how do you then transition them into sleeping in, you know, in a room with an older sibling?
Yeah, that is difficult. I mean, I've had people put the baby's crib in walk-in closets to avoid that situation. You know, you can start early, you know, if you're going to keep the baby in the room only 6 months, to try and, you know, get the baby used to the different noises that the older sibling may be making. But, you know, I would try and wait until the baby is sleeping well, because we don't want the baby, you know, waking up every 3 hours and waking up the sibling. And now you have, a baby that's awake and a two-year-old that is awake and mad, and not going back to sleep very easily. So, you know, even with twins, you know, that sometimes is a problem, because, you know, a lot of people want them in the same room, which is great. But usually one will start sleeping earlier, you know, sooner overnight or longer stretches of periods sooner than the other one. So that can become a problem, because one is trying to sleep and then wakes up the other twin. So a lot of times when they're both, you know, when they're ready to go through sleep training, sometimes we will separate them if one is sleeping much longer, so that that baby can really work on sleep, you know, sleeping even longer. And if one is struggling, we may, you know, put them in a walk-in closet or an office if they don't have another room, and try and work on, you know, getting that baby to get healthier sleep, longer stretches of sleep without being interrupted by the other baby. And then once they're both sleeping well, you know, may only be a few weeks, then, you know, we can put them back in the same room, because then they're not waking themselves up. You know, starting from the beginning, keeping them in the room, you know, they hear each other crying, they're used to it. But for that short time, when one is really sleeping longer and one is struggling, I do find that I have, you know, better luck when I do separate them for even just a couple weeks to work on getting the baby that's struggling a little bit to have better sleep, and then putting them back together.
Is that often an issue with multiples? That, I mean, and I know that every baby, you know, transitions, you know, sort of grows up very differently, but, you know, is that pretty typical with multiples, that whether it's twins or triplets or, you know, however many they you know, that they might sleep even that much different?
Well, yes. At first, when they first come home, what I recommend to parents, if they're going to be getting up during the night, say, you know, just one parent is able to get up with them during the night, or if we're taking care of them during the night, I don't feed the babies at the same time. So if the first one that wakes up, I feed them, give them, you know, good time to get in a good feeding, get in their burps. You know, a lot of times with multiples, they're smaller, they take longer to eat. So you want to give them a good amount of time, you know, like 30 minutes to be able to get in a good feeding, good burps. And then what I do is then I will, you know, wake up the second baby and feed them. So they're on a schedule, you know, that's fencing together. Because if a mom, you know, if a baby nurse is taking care of twins, you know, we don't prop bottles. So we want to feed one, give them a lot of attention, feed them, you know, give them a really good feeding, and then wake the other one and feed that baby. So, you know, if a mom has help and there's going to be two people, you know, that can always feed the babies together, then that's great. You know, they can feed both the babies together, put them back to sleep and get some more sleep. Mm-hmm. But that's usually not the case. So I do, you know, recommend to parents that if there is just only one of them, try not to get them used to during the day always being fed at the same time if there's two people there during the day, because then at night, if they have a baby nurse, you know, they're only going to feed one at night, you know, one at a time, and then feed the other one. And you want to do this so that you don't want to feed one at 12 and then you go back to sleep and then the other one wakes up at 1:30 and then the other one wakes up at 3, and, you know, and it's so spread out, you're not getting any sleep. So hopefully, you know, you can feed one and then feed the other one and go back to sleep and, you know, hopefully get a little bit of sleep at least.
Right.
During that time.
Yeah, which totally makes sense that, you know, it's better to wake up the second baby so that they don't wake up on their own about 30 seconds after you've fallen asleep.
Yeah.
So, once you're up,
exactly.
Up.
Exactly. And then that will change, you know, as they get older, 4 to 5 months, when you do find, you know, that one is sleeping much longer, then you don't want to wake up that baby. Mm-hmm. So you know, you want to encourage, you know, them both to sleep at that point as long as possible. So mm-hmm. at that point, you're going to let them sleep as long as they can, as long as they're eating enough during the day, and, you know, get them to sleep as long as possible.
You mentioned eating enough during the day. I remember we learned a trick once they told us that we could, you know, start eating rice cereal, which was just about five and a half months. My husband would put rice cereal in the bottle at the end of the day, so that our oldest especially would get some rice cereal to try to completely fill her up with her last bottle. And I could tell how tired he was by how much cereal he put in. I don't know if that was ever recommended. I just sort of looked at it and went, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely, it was recommended a long time ago. I did it myself 35 years ago, and they even recommended it sooner at that point. I mean, my kids were 9 pounds, and at like 3 weeks old, the doctor was recommending me give my son cereal.
Wow.
Obviously now, yes, and I didn't know any better, so I'm like, okay. Now they have found that really does not help.
Oh, okay.
It gives us peace of mind. We're thinking that it helps, but it really doesn't.
Okay.
And, you know, what we found, you know, when my kids were, you know, little, they used to have us give them solids first and then follow up with their bottle. And, you know, now we really know that milk is the most important thing for the first year, whether mm-hmm. it's breast milk or formula. We want to make sure that they're getting as much milk as possible. You know, you're introducing solids when your pediatrician recommends, usually now it's 4 to 6 months. Sometimes a little bit earlier, and you want to introduce the solids as texture and get them used to the different flavors and tastes, but you want to make sure that their milk is still their primary intake. So when I do a schedule and babies are on solids, I always have them do their milk first and then wait like an hour and a half and then give them solids. So their belly kind of stays full all day. They're not waking up early from naps because they're hungry, but their main focus is taking in that milk.
Uh-huh. Oh, interesting. Is it ever too late to get a baby or toddler to sleep on their own? I mean, I imagine college might be too late, but when you're, you know,
No, they sleep great then.
Right. But is there ever a point that it's too late to try to train your baby to sleeping on their own?
It really isn't. I get calls from people all the time. I mean, anywhere, you know, up to 3 years old doing, you know, toddler sleep training. If they're sleeping in their parents' bed. So there really is not an age that is too late. It's just, you know, we're going to use different methods depending on how old they are and, you know, what their past environment has been. But, you know, people will think, oh, well, they'll grow out of it. They'll grow out of it. Yeah, but probably not till college. So, you know, if you want sleep and you want them to get healthy sleep, we want to work on it before then. So, you know, we can work on it at any age. We just may use different methods depending on their age and, you know, the habits that they've developed.
What about regression? Because, we learned about regression at 18 months, and I didn't even know it was a thing until, you know, we were so confident in our baby being able to sleep. And then all of a sudden she stopped. So how, if you hit regression and it lasts what you feel like is too long and you've tried going back to what you, you know, what you had whatever method had worked the first time, you know, is that an indication that you need to try something new?
Yeah, again, it depends on their age and, you know, what you have used in the past. You know, 18, you know, say 18 months, you know, they had been sleeping well and now they're not. You know, take a look at how much are they sleeping during the day. Sometimes they're sleeping too much during the day. I've had, you know, nannies that let the baby sleep 5 hours during the day and then all of a sudden they're not sleeping at night or they're having early wake ups at 4 a.m. We don't know why. Once we look at schedule, we realize, you know, they're getting too much sleep during the day and that's what's interrupting their nighttime sleep. Or they're not getting enough sleep during the day. And, I've found this a lot with people going back to work that have babies in daycare. And the daycare is, you know, putting the babies on one nap a day at 1 year old. And in my experience, I found that most 12-month-old babies still need two naps. Mm-hmm. And so that is a real problem that parents are having. Because for the convenience of daycare, they want all the babies, you know, down at 1 o'clock. But, you know, a baby that's, you know, 1 year old still needs two naps. So mm-hmm. when they're not getting enough sleep during the day, you know, usually they're not ready to cut down to one nap till 15 to 18 months at the earliest. Mm-hmm. So if they're being forced to cut down their naps during the day, from the 3 to 4 hour nap hours they may need down to, you know, two, they're going to be overtired. They're going to be going to sleep at night, overtired. They're not going to get in that deep sleep. And all of a sudden they're going to be having these wake ups. Wow. So that's something that you really want to look at, that, you know, are they getting too much sleep during the day? Are they not getting enough sleep? And then, you know, if you, you know, start out, you know, maybe you used the check and console when they were 6 months old and it worked great. You know, you can, once you've figured out what, you know, what the problem is, and now they've just kind of gotten into this habit, you know, you can try the check and console again and maybe, you know, spread out the time longer or, you know, possibly at this age, you know, start out with the check and console and then maybe move to, you know, the cry it out. If they're just getting more angry every time you go in there and you don't pick them up.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting to think too, that not enough sleep could get you, could link, you know, shorten how much they would sleep at night. You would, I think your mind immediately thinks, okay, if they're only getting one nap during the day, that means they're going to sleep a lot longer for us at night. Hooray. But that's absolutely not the case.
It is absolutely not the case. And it's, you know, the biggest problem that I find that I can see right away when I see sleep logs and try and make a plan. And again, it's opposite of what we always think. And it's just a matter of when the babies, you know, they get in this vicious circle of being overtired and their sleep tank is empty, and then they're trying to catch up. And when they're overtired, their cortisol level rises. They can't get into that deep sleep. So then they're not sleeping well at night. Then they're not napping well because they're so overtired. And that's a problem too. A lot of parents have with naps. And naps are tough. Naps are really tough, especially if the babies are not sleeping well during the night, then they're overtired and so they don't want to nap. So what I tell parents to really focus on is getting the baby to sleep before they're overtired. You know, say, example, a four-month-old baby, their awake time is no longer than 2 hours during the day. Mm-hmm. And for that first nap, when they say if they wake up at 7, you want to try and start putting them to bed about an hour and a half later. And so what parents, well, you know, if the baby, say they don't put them down that early, they don't put them down until 10 o'clock and the baby cries for an hour, I always tell them, look back, how long was the baby up before you put him back down to sleep? Because they think, oh, they cried, they wouldn't sleep. They, you know, they weren't tired, but it's totally mm-hmm. the opposite. They were overtired, and that's why they couldn't fall asleep for a nap. So you think, you know, they're so exhausted, they've got to sleep, but they don't. It's just right. too hard for them to fall asleep, you know, after that, drinking that pot of coffee.
Right.
So, right. you know, naps, I really, you know, work with parents a lot on, I mean, my children were terrible nappers, and they probably would have been great nappers had I had a clue what I was doing. But, you know, they were cat nappers, and some babies just really are cat nappers where they just sleep, you know, 45-minute sleep cycle and they wake up and they can't go back to sleep, and they may go back to sleep an hour and a half later. But, you know, for most babies, you know, they say 4 months old, you know, their wake time is only about 2 hours
right.
During the day. So you really want to nap them often, fill that sleep tank so that when they do go to bed at night, you know, they've had good sleep during the day, and that's going to help them to have good sleep during the night.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's very connected. And once they get into that vicious circle of being overtired, it's really hard to break that cycle.
Right. I'll be honest, that was our oldest. She was a cat napper, and she would sleep like 45 minutes and maybe 2 hours later, sleep another 45 minutes. And we were talking to my husband's cousin, who has a son that's just about almost exactly a year older than our oldest. And she goes, how do you get anything done? I said, what do you mean? She said,
right.
Well, she's, you know, that her son slept a great 3 hour nap. She's like, that's when I do everything around the house. How would you get anything done, you know, within 45 minute stretches? But, you know, by the time she was two, she was sleeping in a 3 hour stretch. It just took a while to get there.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, and some babies, you know, that is just their sleep cycles. Mm-hmm. But a lot of babies do cat naps just because they went to bed overtired. We miss that window. You know,
right.
we want to really watch their cues. You know, when they start, you know, if they're up at 7 and 8:15, they're starting to rub their eyes, stare off, pull on their ears. You want to just try and get them down for that nap. Because once they start crying, really crying, you've missed that window.
Oh, interesting.
And they're starting to get overtired.
Yeah, I didn't know about the signs. That's really interesting.
Yeah, and especially to getting them to bed, you know, after that last nap. 4 to 5 months, you know, some babies can only stay up 2 hours before their bedtime, some 3 hours, but never any longer than 3 hours. So if a baby wakes up from their last nap at 3 o'clock, and, you know, they don't take another cat nap, you want to get them to bed by 6. Because if you even wait till 7, they're going to be overtired. And now they're up crying and fussing, and now it's 8, and they're so overtired that they're just going to have an awful night's sleep with lots of wake-ups.
Right. And at that point, now you're exhausted and and so it becomes a vicious cycle.
And you're going to do anything you can to get that baby to sleep.
Right. Yeah. My husband had a buddy who just after our first was born, you know, we'd finally gotten her to sleep. We were, you know, we felt pretty confident as parents. And my husband had a buddy who, you know, just could not get his kid to sleep. And, you know, and he said, we even tried keeping her up later. And my husband just laughed. He's like, you know, I'm not going to lie, that never works. He goes, such a rookie move, man.
But it makes sense. I mean, in, you know, in our normal minds, it makes sense to stay up later. But, you know, it just doesn't work. And, it doesn't work for us either. You know, I mean, I feel like I'm so tired. If I just went to bed at 10 o'clock, I'd go to sleep easily. But, you know, I'm working and all of a sudden it's 1 o'clock in the morning. And then I try and go to sleep and I'm so overtired that I'm laying in bed, you know, thinking of everything until, you know, 3 in the morning. Right. So, you know, we have the same problem. We have the same problem. We just don't handle it very well, but we have usually no problem. I don't anyway. I could sleep late in the morning. If I was able to, that would not be a problem on my part.
Right.
But the babies, it doesn't work out so well.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sleeping late, you know, one biggest issue too that we've run into is, you know, you look at a time change and that's when, you know, we pre-baby, you know, would always look at a time change at either direction as sweet, we get to sleep in, you know, the time is changing and, you know, who cares if we wake up much later than we expect it to? This is fantastic. Babies don't look at it like that. How do you get kids back into a routine after you change from standard to daylight savings time or back from daylight savings time to standard? How do we do that?
I get a lot of calls around time changes. and so what I really recommend is starting like a week before the time change is going to occur and adjust the schedule like even 15 minutes a day in either direction. So that by the time the time change comes, they're going to be more on what they're used to.
Uh-huh.
So if you start early and just, you know, whether you're moving it up, their bedtime up 15 minutes or back 15 minutes, you know, then by the end of the week, they should be at their normal schedule. There's still maybe, you know, a little fighting of the bedtime, but just stay consistent. And just work it slowly rather than just waiting for that time change day to come and then trying to adjust them by the hour, you know, one way or the other. Uh-huh. That, you know, that makes it very difficult.
Oh, wow.
And that's the same way, you know, with vacations when you're, you know, there's time changes, you know, time changes, there isn't much you can do about that. Or if they're sick and, you know, you have to hold them more or hold them upright more. You know, what I tell parents when, you know, there's any kind of vacation or the baby's sick, you know, there's going to have to be adjustments.
Right.
The most important thing is, you know, once the baby's feeling better, get them right back onto their schedule. Mm-hmm. What parents will do is, you know, they may hold them longer and then, oh, the baby's like, oh, this is lovely. I'm going to keep doing this. And so they will fight going back to their normal schedule, but you want to, you know, whatever, you know, sleep training process that you used, get right back on it. Once the baby's feeling better, once you're back from vacation, you want to get back on it and be very, very consistent because mm-hmm. the longer you drag it out, the more used to, you know, this new norm of being held again and rocked and fed sleep, the baby will get used to. You know, they say it takes 3 days to make a habit and 7 days to break it.
Oh.
So the quicker that you can get them back on their consistent routine, the better.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you don't think about it until, you know, until you're a parent of how key routine is. You know, it's very easy to be carefree with pre-kids. But once you're a parent, that routine, even from eating to, you know, even when they're older, when they get up and go to school is the key to making life so much easier.
Right. And, you know, I tell parents, you know, you have to live,
right.
You know, you get on such a strict schedule, and I mean, it's great for the baby, but there's going to be times where, you know, Aunt Sally has an 80th birthday party and you want to go to the dinner and you keep the baby up later that night. And, you know, if it's something important, you know, I just always tell parents, you know, do it for something important that you really want to do, because you're going to be the one that suffers the next day.
Right.
You know, because things are going to be off. So, you know, man, Aunt Sally's dinner might not be important enough for you to suffer the next couple days. But, you know, if it is something that, you know, you really want to do and the baby is going to be off schedule, you know, you have to live. I mean, you want to get them on the best sleep schedule possible, but things are going to come up, and, you know, you make those provisions, and then you just get right back on the schedule the next day. And, you know, you may have a couple rough days, but you just want to be consistent and stick to it, and, you know, you can get through it.
Right. Is there, if you start or as a parent, if you're starting, you know, a sleep routine at about 4 months, is there an appropriate age to start introducing a bedtime story to it? You know, is that usually okay at 4 months? I don't know how much, you know,
sure,
kids are going to recommend.
Sure, anytime. Yeah, I mean, anytime. Reading, you know, I feel like is the absolute best thing that we can do for our kids. So, I mean, I tell people, pick a routine, you know, even as early as 6 weeks when you're putting the baby to bed. They really thrive on a consistent routine. And even though they're young, you know, I tell people, you know, whether they're going to, you know, get a bath, get a little massage, get in, you know, swaddled or their sleep sack, read even, a page of a story if they're only 6 weeks old, if that's going to be part of your routine. I don't think it's ever too young to start reading. It's just spending quality time with the baby. And then, you know, the first, you know, 4 months, they are going to eat, you know, before they go to sleep. Even after 4 months, we do have them, you know, eat right before they go to sleep. So we want them to have that same routine. So whether you're going to go in, you know, turn the noise machine on, draw the blinds, close the curtains, you want to be consistent. And I mean, mm-hmm. It's funny because even with my granddaughter, even when she was like two, I had her on, you know, a schedule where, you know, we'd go in, we'd read a book, you know, we put her sleep sack on, we'd close the blinds. As she got older, she turned on the noise machine with me, and she was in such a routine that, you know, if I forgot a step, she'd, Gigi, you have to put on the noise machine. You know, they love that security of the consistency. So it really does help. And, you know, you just don't, I tell parents, you don't want the bedtime routine to be 2 hours long. That's what I find a lot. And, you know, you want to start it, say we're putting them in bed at 7, you know, if they're going to have a bath, you know, maybe start it at 6, you know, give them their bath, their massage, put them in their sleep sack, put the noise machine on, dim the lights, read the book, feed them. Hopefully they'll still be just drowsy, not sound asleep, and put them to bed. And then in the morning, do the opposite. So when you go in, they know that it's time to get up, you know, and I usually always say the same thing, you know, good morning, beautiful, like whatever it is. And, you know, I get them up, we open the blinds, we turn off the noise machine, I get them, I change them, get them dressed for their day, and then I take them to another room to feed them. Because once we start baby-directed sleep after 4 months, we want to try and disassociate feeding with sleep. So, you know, the first 4 months, a lot of times, you know, you feed them, boom, they fall asleep.
Right.
When we try and start sleep training, we start to disassociate feeding with sleep so that they are going to sleep on their own without, you know, the habit of being fed. So then we try and use more of an easy program where they eat, they have activities, and then they go to sleep on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So with their own self-soothing. So we you know, we really try and, you know, just except for at night before they go to bed, we want to fill their bellies with that last feeding. But, you know, during the day, we want to try and disassociate feeding with going to sleep after 4 months.
Wow. Well, Pam Jones, thank you so much for taking your time today with us at Masters in Parenting. This has been unbelievably helpful. Thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you so much. I can't wait to see everything going on in Chicago Parent Magazine. It's a wonderful magazine that we wholly support, and I'm happy to help parents any way that I can. So please call us back anytime.
Thank you.